And welcome back. A lot of people have been waiting for this program ever since our last visit with Marcia McDowell and scientist Dan Burrish. They are both back tonight to talk more in detail about Dan's work at Area 51, S4 to be exact, deep underground with an ET. It's going to be a fascinating conversation. Is it real? It's up to you to decide. I've known Dan, and certainly not directly, but his work for a number of years. Marcia has been all over the internet at many locations with very vital information. Bill Hamilton, of course, has been doing a lot to publicize Dan's work and this whole amazing controversy, and we're very honored and pleased to have both Dan and Marcia back with us tonight. We're going to go into detail about this whole issue of the J-Rod or the extraterrestrial, Dan's interaction with him, what he learned from the J-Rod, and what our future may hold. Last time we were together, we talked about timelines, converging timelines, and all of that. It may have been a little confusing. I don't think it was, because I think Dan, a scientist, explained it very well, as did Marcia. And they're both back tonight to pick up where we left off and to continue forward. So forward it shall be. Dan Burrish, are you there?
I certainly am, sir. How are you?
Fine. Welcome back.
Thank you.
How was the response to our first visit together?
Well, I've had a few people wanting to skin me.
Dead or alive? Both, right? Yes.
All of them who wanted to skin me are alive. Some of them that wanted to skin me may have wanted me other ways, but
I see.
A few people got upset about my providing even initials on live air. And,
really? You mean
they're just going to have to get over it.
The MJ-12 folks you saluted?
A couple of them, and a couple individuals with their own agenda. Both sides are just going to have to get over it. I made a promise to a very private group of people that I would be providing at least initials publicly, mm-hmm. so that these individuals can at least be, you know, pointers can be pointing toward them so that they can ultimately account as well.
Mm-hmm.
And whether they refuse to, that's their problem.
Right.
But I made those promises, I fulfilled the promises, and the other individuals I haven't asked for their opinion, so I'm going to do as I do.
Okay, well, we shall see what comes up tonight. We stopped last time. Pretty interesting information, just from start to finish. I don't know how anybody could not sit by and be just amazed at it all. The issues we want to talk about tonight, Dan, are what, briefly? Let's give a little thumbnail sketch of where we want to go with this.
Well, I'm not so certain that this is so much of a thumbnail sketch, but I did, in fact, find a reference to the Stargate issue involving Iraq.
Oh, you did?
Yes, I did. And it actually had crept out into the internet literature as early as February of 2003. This was approximately a year after information about me really started to become evolved into the internet arena.
Well, it was Marcy's fault.
Actually, it was her fault much earlier, and
I remember it goes back many years.
But before it was her fault, it actually had to do with Eagles Disobey, the case for Inca City Mars.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of it that was her fault had to do with this little document that I'd also like to talk about tonight.
Sure.
That document has become rather infamous. I doubt we would call it famous, but infamous, called the Q94109 Alpha document, which in fact is an authentic document which was leaked out of S4 by one Dr. Stephen M. to Marcia McDowell, and it was a number 3 of 4, as I understand it, draft document, which contained both typographical errors from Stephen and myself, and from the typist who had handed it back to us. It would have been one of the last documents that I would have wanted leaked out to the public, but nevertheless, there it is, and it does actually contain accurate information.
Hmm. Since we talked, Jeff, last time, I took the leaked document that I had gotten from Steve, and I laid it out on my computer keyboard, and I took some new photographs of it, and I put those up on eaglesdisobey.net.
Okay.
It's under a special section, the Q94 section.
right, all we have to do is click on Marcia's name at guests@rents.com. Scroll down. Where am I going to be looking for?
Yeah, you're going to be looking on the right-hand side.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to go down through a series of small link banners. Your link banners there.
There it is.
It's
not very far down. Let's count the boxes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's the sixth box down on the right side.
There you go.
Third link. Click
the
here to
link.
Go to the Q94 document.
Right.
Okay. Well, click on that, and we'll be there. So we are there now, and I do see the picture. So, okay, why don't we just go ahead and start where you'd like to start, Dr. Dan, and we'll take a journey here.
Okay. Let's start with the issue involving the stargates and where I found this information.
Well, you have to define stargates again for
okay.
our listeners.
All right. Well, from what I understand. And again, I'm not a physicist, but mm-hmm. From what I understand, there are two separate varieties of actual portals, if you will, or stargates. Ones are naturally occurring portals around Earth, which vary in location depending upon our position in space.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are those devices which human beings have created from ancient technology. A spin-off of which is also used for looking glass technology. But these devices are actually able to access, with the use of some variety of electromagnetic strange matter,
mm-hmm.
I believe that's the actual term for it, strange matter, a wormhole to either travel or to mm-hmm. communicate from one place, a great distance, three-dimensional distance, away from another place in our universe.
Mm-hmm.
Approximately a year after, and I'm framing this about 2002 here, approximately about a year after information about me started really popping out in the public, one Dr. Michael E. Sala, for whom I have great respect.
I know Michael. Sure, he's been on the program.
Yes, www.exopolitics.org. On February 3, 2003, published a research study number 2 called An Exopolitical Perspective on the Preemptive War Against Iraq. And in that treatise on February 3, 2003, he mentioned if there is a stargate existing in southern Iraq that will play a role in such a prophesied return of the gods, then it is most likely that clandestine government organizations that greatly influence or control the Bush administration, no kidding there, are aware, that was my addition, by the way, are aware of the existence of the role of this stargate.
Mm-hmm.
So he actually had it fairly close way back then.
I remember that document. I posted it. Interesting. Yeah, okay. And
this was
and
before we attacked them the second time.
Right, right. And been dropping uranium weapons on them ever since.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the depleted DU.
There's no depletion anywhere. They're uranium weapons, as you well know as a scientist, and with a half-life of 4.4 billion years. It's, in other words, it's over.
Well, yeah, I'm aware of the disgusting use of, and I understand the military aspect of it as well, but the disgusting use of depleted uranium as it aerosolizes, becoming infused in lung tissue and
of course.
Absolutely.
Well, nanosized particulates now literally are measurable around the world from their use in Yugoslavia, Iraq, and Afghanistan.
True.
So. Anyway, okay.
Right, I'm not able to defend against that. I haven't, of course, made the decision to use such a thing on those people. I have an absolute hatred for the use of nuclear weapons whatsoever.
Right. Okay.
In any case, he hit the mark right on. Now, casting us a little bit farther back to the end of 1990 and the start of 1991. I was involved in fact, with a couple of trips into southern Iraq. And,
you were involved with a couple of trips into southern Iraq?
Yes, sir.
Back to prior to 1991?
In the start of 1991. Two trips
right.
at the start of 1991.
All right, that's Gulf War I.
Yes, it is.
Right.
The first trip was a recovery trip. The second trip was a military.
All right, we'll talk about those in just a couple minutes. Very special guests tonight, Marcia McDowell and Dan Burrish. Be right back. with Marcia McDowell, PhD, and scientist Dan Burrish. Dr. Dan Burrish is turning into a very controversial figure on the internet and elsewhere, and we're very pleased to have both of these folks on tonight. Okay, Dan, 1991, you made two trips to Iraq. This is Gulf War One time. What was that about?
Between those two trips, I actually did a presentation at the Clark County Planetarium about the state of the biosphere of Earth as well. So I was
at the Clark County Planetarium.
Yes, I was kind of busy.
Yeah.
At the start of 1991. At the end of 1990, though, I was pulled up north to deal with a biological control problem, which was being foreseen on the horizon that could develop in southern Iraq during the, at that time, anticipated start of Desert Storm.
Mm-hmm.
Following that, I was pulled, and I'm not going to get too much into that biological control issue here on the air, but following that, I was pulled into a separate operation just outside of Uruk, Iraq, the old Akkad, Iraq,
mm-hmm.
To pick up with from some sources some small cylinder seals. This was actually a requirement of one of the two treaties that we have underway with the Human Lineage Extraterrestrials, called the OF Treaty, not the T Treaty, but the OF, meaning the P plus 52,000 year ahead of us extraterrestrials. And what we were to do is pick up certain cylinder seals and quietly transfer them back to the United States of America.
What were these cylinder seals like? What were they made of?
I never actually saw them. I just was actually there during the transport because I was an official from Majestic.
Catherine.
They were delivered to us in small sealed attaché cases, and we carried them. So I'm under the belief, because I have seen the transfers from them, meaning the rolled ink transfers from the cylinder seals, I'm under the belief that they were probably no more than an inch or 2 inches in length.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But in any case, we went there and we transferred these out, and I was made aware at the time that it had to do with a treaty system. I was not told at the time what treaty system it was,
mm-hmm.
Because I didn't have the so-called need to know at the time. So I agreed to do that because I was already working for Majestic, and we went in and were flown in with MH-60s, and we were flown out.
Who accompanied you? What kind of soldiers?
These were Night Stalkers from the United States Army.
Okay.
There were two covert units of Night Stalkers along with Majestic personnel.
And who had the cylinders? That you had to...
They were handed over by a couple tribal leaders.
So it was
over
a voluntary thing.
Yes, over to the liaison whom I was with,
mm-hmm.
and the liaison actually took possession of them, but in accordance with the treaty during the transports of these, it was required, as I was told, that at least two representatives from Majestic actually transport them, and being that I was, mm-hmm. we'll just say, rather close with one of the... higher ups, one of the actual J numbers,
mm-hmm.
I was picked to actually go along as a trustworthy person, and, did so, and we left with very little consequence.
All right, these cylinders, Sumerian, pre-Sumerian, what was
it? They were Sumerian,
mm-hmm.
and from what I have seen, the inkings from them, the rollings from them, matched what I ultimately saw at the end of 2003 with regard to the use of a portal in Egypt. And in fact, what they were is they were designs for human-made Stargate tuning devices. In other words, devices which would open up a portal from a natural hyperspace wormhole.
And how many of these wormholes are accessible from, shall we say, the surface areas of the Earth? Are they all over the place? Or are they?
The higher the energetic space that we enter, the higher mm-hmm. the hyperdimensional energetic space, the more the access points. But I'm not certain as to the actual number of them.
Okay, dozens, hundreds.
Hundreds, probably worldwide.
We're
yes.
talking natural ones here.
Yes,
I
yes.
gotcha. All right. So and
the
where
tuning devices like open them up like a door, if you will.
It's like a key. All right.
Exactly.
Where do they go? Wherever you want them to go, or do they all go to a different location?
Depending upon the tuning device which is added, and for those who saw the image of the looking glass, which was up during the last show.
Right, it's still linked to your name.
Okay, great. The tuning device actually looked like one of those looking glass devices set up on an angle, and then there were three pillars which were set around it, one behind it and two to the front right, and one to the front right and one to the front left, or two in front of it. And when those tuning devices were turned on with those pillars with the looking glass type technology, a large gray space seemed to open up ostensibly out of nowhere. It looked like a large gray oval. And I personally saw that in Egypt at the end of 2003. So I know they're real, because I've actually seen them. And I know the looking glass is real because I've actually seen that. But
they
open up a space, and how they actually tune it, I was told that it depended upon the electromagnetic frequency. Aside from that, I don't know.
You've actually seen a lot more with the looking glass.
Well, I have.
Considering, you know, the experimental paradigms that were going on up there for a couple of years.
Well, right,
years anyway.
And when it was closed down as well,
right.
It was very clear that we are at a precipice of one or two different paths, and that's determined by an oscillation back and forth between what we were seeing up at S4 with the looking glass, an oscillation back and forth between the two different possible timelines. And it gradually got to the point where it was flickering back and forth between the two possibilities so fast it took a computer to actually separate the two and calculate the percentage of time taken on each timeline.
For the probability.
Exactly, and that's how the probability was developed, that we had a 19% probability with 85% confidence that a T2-type catastrophe could occur within the next several years.
Okay, back with Dr. Stan Burrish and Marcia McDowell. Okay, Dan, let's step ahead here. This is all fascinating. And for those of you who are out there and sitting on an honestly skeptical point, that's fine. Skepticism is always welcome on this program. And, you know, ask questions. Make questions. Email to Eagles, the Eagles site. I guess that's the place to go, right? Where
yeah,
would you like questions,
questions,
Marcy?
You can do one of two things. We've got a forum. You can click on the top left link to go to our forum, and
the Eagles forum. Yep, there it is.
Right there, where you can put your questions in to be included in our question and answer DVDs, or you can just email me directly at Marcia_McDowell@yahoo.com, and I'll collect whatever questions you might have, and post them, talk to Dan about them, and see what we can do to answer them.
Very good, thank you.
Skepticism. Skepticism, Jeff, is a good thing.
It's a wonderful thing.
Cynicism is another matter.
Oh, yeah.
I am happy to take skeptical questions and answer them to the best of my ability, any questions to the best of my ability.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've determined to do is, after this first DVD concerning my debriefing, and we're going, believe me, it's painstakingly, thanks, Marcia,
oh, yeah,
painstakingly through my years, but once that comes out, we've determined to go ahead and do a community questions DVD so that I can be directly responsive to all of the questions that the public have placed to me. And when I'm directly responsive to them, they can look in my eyes as I'm speaking back with the best answers that I can provide.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, there are no anonymous cowards, so to speak, hiding in the background, providing false information or disinformation. I'm going to say, to the best of my ability, what the true answers are, and if I don't know the answers, I'm going to say I don't know.
No, nothing wrong with that.
That's all I can do. That's
good.
All I can do.
Very good.
Maybe for a moment here, you had mentioned that these cylinder seals in 1991 were handed over willingly.
Mm-hmm.
Not so. The cylinder seals in 2003. Now, let me provide a little bit of a backdrop here.
But I wanted to ask also, maybe you could work this in, if there is a relationship to the looting of the historical artifacts of the museums and other areas and institutions in Iraq, which housed some of the great sacred antiquities, which have been just ripped off.
There is not only a relationship. Some of the operatives from Majestic were directly involved in inciting the looting so that they could infiltrate in the same way as mad psyop people have infiltrated the UFO community over the years. They infiltrated into the looting activities to remove specifically targeted items.
What kind of teams did they send in to do this? Do you know?
They had sleepers, just like Al Qaeda has them around us.
Uh-huh.
They had sleepers set up already inside of Iraq.
They were ready to pounce.
Absolutely. Okay. That was well ahead of time. The black operations units were in there, and they were enculturated, and they were linked up with allied or like-minded people.
Got it. Okay. Very good.
And, you know, whether or not they told them the truth or not, I have no clue. I don't know what was, you know, specifically going on with that.
Okay.
But I do know that once in 2003, these specifically targeted items were removed. They were flown to all places, Tinian Island in the Pacific.
Tinian? Why?
That I don't know. I've asked, and I asked prior to my official retirement. Now I don't think it'd be probably wise for me to ask at all for the reception I received over
Pretty
the last
famous,
week.
Famous name for World War II.
It was a special place for World War II, of course, with Enola Gay, as I recall. But in any case, they were flown there for a short period of time to Tinian, and where they have gone from there, I do know. Will not say. But if I were brought before a closed session of the United States Senate or Congress, I would reveal it at that time.
Those are cylinders, or are they other items as well?
These were cylinder seals, and there were parchments as well, some tablets, which were targeted and removed. It doesn't take, and I'm certainly not a rocket scientist, but I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that some folks went into the basements. For instance, one of the Baghdad museums.
Right.
Some folks went into the basements and they only removed certain items.
I remember reading about this. Very selective looting going on. I saw that in a couple of stories.
Yeah, that is mostly all covered over now as a general act of looting and lawlessness.
Correct.
In which most items were all returned.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we all forget about the specificity of the actual acts of theft, or we're supposed to, I guess. I don't know.
Okay.
But in any case, they were removed by act of force in 2003. Now, as a backdrop to this, what the heck am I talking about when I mention an OF treaty or a T9 treaty? In 1954, a group of P plus 52,000 year from now, Orions, met inside of the United States. Oh, it's hard to even mention this name in public, with Dwight David Eisenhower. You see, I'm enculturated after 20 years to keep my mouth shut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this is very, very difficult.
Kind of difficult.
They met with Dwight David Eisenhower, and they brokered a set of treaties which would then be later signed between the P plus 45,000s, the so-called rogues, our less than favorites who would invade our bedrooms in the middle of the night and abduct us, and the P plus 52,000 J-Rods, the Federals, of which Kaela, the specific J-Rod that I met, was a member, and the Orions and our present-day human authorities, of which the United Nations has been involved as well as Majestic.
Mm-hmm.
The first OF-9, or the OF-9-1 treaty, was signed in 1955, and this was between the Orions, the Federals, and we. The first T9 treaty was then signed in 1958, which contained all of the future human lineage authorities, if you will, the powers.
That included the
rogues.
Did these emanate from the rumored visit where Ike left Palm Springs ostensibly to go to his dentist's office and actually went to Edwards.
That, in fact, is on the mark.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
All right. So the meeting of Eisenhower and extraterrestrials in 1954
did occur.
Long rumored about by many on the internet, happened. All right.
It did in fact occur. That's part of the society in which we worked in Majestic. That was just basic knowledges.
Very good. All right. Stand by, and we'll take a little break and come right back with Dan Burrish and Marcia McDowell right after this. I'm Jeff Rentz. Glad you're along. Don't forget our website at Rentz.com. That's R-E-N-S-E, if you're new to the program, .com. All right, Dan, let's move forward.
All right. These treaties have moved forward through the years, ultimately for a final T9 treaty, which would be between all of the future human lineage authorities and ourselves, a final one scheduled for the springtime of 2012.
Uh-huh.
The last signature T9 treaty was actually signed in 2003, and then it had to be placed in abeyance and then finally in effect in 2004. I was actually present at that treaty negotiations, which occurred in a fairly remote area of the Bandelier National Monument, New Mexico, not that far from Los Alamos. I was present during the one day of negotiations and was privileged to provide a very small presentation concerning the LOTUS project, which I've been part of and Marcia is not part of.
It wasn't such a small presentation, Dan. I mean,
it was a very
impactful presentation.
In comparison to the length of the treaty signatures and the length of the negotiations that went on, it was small. Yes, there was a certain impact to it.
Dan, excuse me. What was the venue of this get together? I have a story, an alleged meeting of ETs at a remote New Mexico desert area where someone went on a bus and said that there was a disc there on the ground and there were a number of ETs there, and clearly it was some kind of a meeting. Is that the same one?
No.
Okay.
This was a dug-in facility, underground facility, which was cleaned and used specifically for the negotiations of the T9 treaty.
Okay.
I believe I am aware of the story that you're citing there.
Mm-hmm.
However, I don't know of its provenance.
Okay. Very good.
In any case, I was present to describe the LOTUS model, which ended up actually becoming part of the treaty system, a project which Marcia, myself, and earlier on even Deborah was assisting with.
Right.
And during that, I mentioned concerning the fruit of the tree of life. Now, present at this meeting, if you will, in their strollers, in their confined atmospheres, were representatives from both of the P plus 52,000 societies, the J-Rods and the Orions, the Orion so-called Nordics or Pauls, and two representatives of the P plus 45,000 Rogues, and a couple representatives from the present-day human authorities.
Mm-hmm.
During that speech, and in that same room before the gathered attendees, a box, a cube, was placed, which would act as a movie theater, basically, for the attendees. This movie theater a cube has become known or has leaked into the popular genre of ufology as the so-called yellow disc.
Hmm.
And what this was a small, compact variety of looking glass technology, which was several thousand years ahead of the looking glass technology that we've actually employed.
Mm-hmm.
It opened up and it showed the attendees the results of their actions if they were to attempt to use this seed, if you will, this principle having to do with the so-called LOTUS. they were aghast as they saw destruction, both for us as well as for themselves. They basically saw themselves standing on the bones of their children. At the same time, it was rather artfully linked that the studies which have been undertaken by the P plus 45,000 J-Rod rogues during abductions, which are it's a longitudinal genetic drift study wherein they're attempting to ameliorate their neuropathy, that there was a linkage between the natural progression of humanity, this principle which is called Lotus, and our addition of the Lotus and certain criteria for their abductions to be placed in the treaty system, whereupon all abductions were finally ruled off from the last T9 treaty, which means that if any abductions of human beings are occurring from P plus 45,000 rogues, and again, I don't rule out that there are other extraterrestrial species out there or even possibly even visiting here. I can't rule that out. That would be foolish given the size of the cosmos.
Right.
But any abductions from these so-called greys, which are actually P plus 45,000 rogues, are in fact a violation or an abrogation of treaty.
Hmm.
So they have actually ruled them off.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, they wouldn't have ruled that off if you hadn't have been so forthright and your presentation hadn't been so important. So, you know, you're kind of minimizing your participation there, but you really were responsible for getting those abductions, like, zeroed out.
Thank you, but I defer to the rest of the the participants there who actually made the decisions.
But I appreciate the
overture.
Okay, yeah. All right.
In case we are due for a next OF-98, which is scheduled for 2009, which would be between the Orions, the Federals, which are both 52,000 years ahead of us, and we, and then the final T9 treaty to be scheduled in 2012. But when we found out that there, in fact, was Stargate technology still lingering around the Middle East area, just prior to the 2003 attack on Iraq, it was determined that at whatever cost, whatever use of force, that technology would be stopped. The ultimate, of course, failure, that I can only see one failure which would be greater than war, and that would be to not remove this technology from its availability and its ultimate use, if you will, during the time of our passage over the galactic plane. So I support its removal from use. However, that does not mean that I stand in support of the invasion of Iraq.
All right, well said. Understand. Okay, coming up on just about 3 minutes left in this hour. So to tie this all up, we've got treaties. We had cylinders retrieved. We've got, and again, I think we should talk about this 45 and 52,000 year. 52, isn't it?
Yes. 45 and 52. It's approximately 52,000 years. These are nicknames for a group at around 52,000 years and around 45,000.
I thought it was a little loose there. Okay. But this is not to say that it is necessarily 52,000 years by our measure of time, is it? Or is it?
It is to say that if we travel forward over the next couple of years and transition from the timeline that we are in to a secondary timeline,
right,
as evidenced by a catastrophic event, then it would be 52,000 years ahead of us now.
Okay.
If, in fact, we do not transition, which is what we have been fighting against, we do not transition into that timeline number two, then there will be, I suppose it's in, well, everything is in the hands of God, there will be a restacking of the cards, and what it will ultimately mean to the P plus 45,000s and the P plus 52,000s, we do not know. They could blink out of existence. That they could diverge, as Michio Kaku would say, into another universe, or they could remain as non-human lineage extraterrestrials thereafter. We don't know.
It could be a complete reshuffling.
How much?
We don't know.
How much human lineage do they actually possess? Is it a direct descendant issue?
Yes.
It's direct.
Yes, it's direct descendant.
So they haven't hybridized with any other species or anything. This is us in the future.
Oh, well. That's getting into a different subject, and
know,
that has to do with genetic engineering. And in fact, the both the P plus 45s and the P plus 52s are in fact the recipients of some genetic engineering.
Well, we're playing around with that now, so God only knows what will be going on in 2,000 years, let alone 50.
Well, when we were analyzing the cells from Kyala, it was very clear that they had what was called an external and an internal cytoplasm of the cell, which is the material that surrounds the controlling center of a cell, which is called the nucleus. And that external cytoplasm was added somehow. And what we did is we used certain chemicals, which are like a chemical now known as reversine, which was used to de-differentiate the cells back to an earlier state. And from that, we ended up theorizing that the external cytoplasm, and this is something that Kyala didn't even really want to talk about, and they don't even want to talk about during the treaty process, but that in fact there was were affirmative actions of genetic engineering on the ectodermal or neural cells, in this case of the J-rods, and they had stayed in that extant state of genetic engineering long enough where there were actual what are called endosymbionts, bacteria from an extraterrestrial origin, which were then encapsulated in the external cytoplasms of their neurons, and they could be traced back to extraterrestrial DNA within them. So very clearly we've answered the question not only of are we alone in the universe, but are we alone as even life as principle.
External cytoplasm.
No.
What's holding it to the cell? Another membrane on the outside?
Yes. What
so
happened
it's a
is
double membrane cell, outer and then inner, cytoplasm both in the first layer and in the interior layer.
Right, the game that was played had to do with something called endoplasmic reticulum, which was then used as a barrier between an internal and an external cytoplasm.
Okay, I got you. All right. Okay, fascinating material, and we'll be back to do our second hour in just a few minutes. Don't go away. All right, right back with you. I'm Jeff Rentz with Drs. Dan Burrish and Marcia McDowell. All right, Dan, there are a lot of people who want to hear more about your interaction with the ET at S4, and I know it's not something you want to spend a prodigious amount of time on, but we're going to have to get something out of you.
I know. You now know my heart on the issue. I have to apologize. It is just literally not something that I'm going to be talking about for too much longer. My life has moved on, and frankly, the effects of the interaction with the J-Rod have had such a deep and profound influence on me that it's time to move on.
It's understandable. Now, let me ask an adjunct question to that comment.
Sure.
The communications you maintained with the J-Rod were of a telepathic nature, for the most part.
Yes.
Hand gestures, I don't know. Maybe there was a wink here and there, but
there were some winks and some nods.
Okay, now that I don't pretend to be an expert on it, but I would surmise that that has the potential to touch you at some extraordinary levels, which ordinarily are simply not accessed by human beings in a commonly conscious state of affairs.
True.
I think this might make it. This is why it's sometimes difficult to talk about.
That's my point. It really deeply and obviously, irrevocably changed your life. And it's not something you want to, you know, have picnics in there all the time. It's
No, absolutely not. And when you hear someone else speaking in your head, and you know it's not just a hallucination, and you know that it's a person standing in front of you, it does affect you.
Understand, and you also, I would assume, Dan, excuse me, but would you not sense, feel, transmitted emotion as well? Of course.
I was feeling the emotion from the J-Rod continuously, right. And he, me, when we were entrained. I noticed during the first interactions with him, I almost got off to talking about just biology for a while. Now we're back on him.
Sorry.
Well, let's talk about PNAs, just kidding. He would entrain me and relax me immediately, bringing me from a highly alert and focused state, like a beta wave state, into a relaxed but alert alpha type state in my mind.
All right.
And right after that would occur, he began hitting me with waves of emotion and thought, and in many of those instances, because of the way that his brain had, and this is actually rapid, given just 52,000 years in the course of evolutionary history, but given the state that his brain had developed into, I was actually seeing his memory or his thought. And so when he would entrain me, I was in a three-dimensional world of his mind, if you will, a three-dimensional thought memory of his. And I was experiencing what he had either experienced or had experienced via another J-Rod whom had communicated with him.
And quick question. And was communicating with him, even though he was physically isolated? What are the lengths, the distances that telepathy will be effective at?
I'm aware of current things that are out there in ufology concerning channeling and the alleged existence of communication from here to reticulum by channeling. While I am no authority in any law of consciousness, all I can say is that the J-Rod that I knew had the capability of sending a telepathic message through entrainment somewhere between 12 and probably not over 17 meters. That was it.
Makes sense to me. It does.
This
whole channeling thing has always left me scratching my head. You never know who's really on the other side if you are, in fact, actually channeling anything. There are probably pranksters and hucksters and phonies over there, as there are here. So,
yeah.
I mean, we could go on and on about this, but so it doesn't have to be coming from 28,000 light years away. It can be coming from, you know, the very same room, just someone on the other side of the next veil who's having a good time with your consciousness.
And you've just brought up something very important that I think should be declared. One of the basic criticisms which has been leveled against me is acceptance. And I'm not that easily fooled. I'm aware that this was a human being. I am aware that he was 52,000 years ahead in a separate timeline from what we now exist. But being a human being, human beings lie. Being that he was 52,000 years ahead of us, was he capable of outwitting me? Probably. Do I believe that he did? No. And that's because of taking not only an entire assessment of him as a person around me for the few years that we were actually around each other on a semi-regular basis, but also the fact that some of the information that he told me ended up happening subsequently, things that he was aware of that would be happening in our future, meaning between now and when there would be a possible exchange of timelines.
Mm-hmm.
So taking the full guy at his summation, I think he was telling me the truth.
Was he a nice guy? I mean, could you relate to him in a sense that he was another person, or was he so different that it was relating to another form of intelligence, but there was no kindred spirit there, or was there?
There was still the so-called spark of the human heart.
All right.
That was still present in him. And that is something that I actually had a communication with him about, stating that, what the P-45,000s were doing were looking for something. It's, you know, the old statement, God never did give nothing to the tin man that he didn't already have. They still had the spark of humanity within them, yet the P plus 45,000s were coming back here and specifically looking at our DNA and our changes in the DNA for the electromagnetic resonance around it, which they called the combined resonance, the joined resonance. And because they had split off from the Orions so many years to our future, if we transited from our T1 timeline over to T2, that they felt as though they lost something. And I kept saying to him in the communications, I can still feel your heart. You're still a human being, which means that if you're still a human being, so are they.
Mm-hmm.
They're 7,000 years younger along the timeline than you are,
mm-hmm.
so they're certainly still human beings. That what they're doing is they're making excuses for their lack of willingness to feel their hearts.
Hmm.
And he actually agreed with me with that. And in one instance, which was actually after the big hoo-ha that happened inside of the Clean Sphere where I fell over backward and he climbed on me.
He climbed on you?
He did. I mean, he never knocked me over. There's a.
I just finished editing that piece, as a matter of fact, into the DVD.
You're laughing.
That's why I'm laughing.
Did you trip?
Yes, I fell over back.
Fell.
What happened? Okay, what happened was this. As I said, we were supposed to step in, step to our right, and hold our hand up in the air, and then there would be a projection in the teleprompter, and whereupon he would then recognize me as a friend, duh, and then I would begin stepping toward him. Well, I began to step toward him in the manner that I was ordered to do so, which is almost a bride's step, one foot forward, then another foot forward.
Then stop, and then take
right. Well, I did this a couple times, and all of a sudden he took two very large flops toward me, which had never happened before. Now, all of the kindred spirit which had been built up over that time, all of the friendliness, all of the relaxation with my environment went right out the window, and I got the willies, and I lost my composure. I don't think I screamed, but I know I stepped back in panic, and the floor of the Clean Sphere was set with very small distance grating on the floor, and my shoe, I'm still not sure if it was right or left foot, was caught in the grating, and I fell over backward.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, set the scene, I'm lying there on my back, panicking, waving my arms in the air like a cockroach, in a total panic, and he continued to walk toward me and stepped up onto my chest, whereupon the B-unit team outside the Clean Sphere and the people in the gallery also began to panic. And at that point is when he started to communicate with me directly.
And he said, just...
Well, he
cool.
told me to relax. He was not
Take
going to hurt
easy.
Me.
Not a problem. Interesting. Well, it's a cute little vignette. All right, with a 3 foot tall, what we would call, I guess, a gray being.
Yes.
Big eyes and all that, and still, apparently, a potentially big heart. Okay, we'll be right back in just a couple minutes. Hey Dan, so he's standing on your chest. He says, calm down. Everyone outside is apparently in a panic. You're okay. You're not doing any verbalizing at that point that you know of. You're still establishing or trying to establish, I guess, telepathic mental contact with him, and he's saying what? Gee, I'm sorry you fell over. I didn't trip you.
No, I was in way too much of a panic to try to be attempting contact.
What
with
did
him.
You think was going to happen to you? What was at the seat of your panic? Now you'd been meeting with this fellow before.
Well, I had, and I had been in the Clean Sphere several times before with him, and I think it was just the break of protocol. I felt comfortable within the procedures that we had, but once that protocol was broken, it was as if all of the curtains had dropped around me, and I was scared for my life, to be honest with you.
Huh. Okay. Now this is important.
It scared me that bad.
it's important to differentiate between the 52,000s and the 47s. This is a 52. The 47s are the ones involved with abductions and all the rest of it. Did the 52s explain to you, or did this particular fellow explain to you what all this abduction stuff is about, and what, you know, a lot of rumors, and we've touched on it briefly in the past, but for our listeners who don't remember, what are they allegedly doing, these 47,000s?
Sure. The 45, it's about 45.
45s, I'm sorry.
Right around there. I don't know, give or take 1,000 years, I guess, but they've been classically called 45s in our society, but
I was thinking of the 7,000-year spread between 45 and 52.
Yeah. It was not only explained by him, not during this one instance where he began downloading and showing me all kinds of weird stuff, but it had been explained by him their purpose, and I was also aware from the briefings that I had had within Majestic up at S4 the purposes of the abductions, and what they were doing is they're actually committed to a longitudinal, which is why many people find that if it happens to them, it happens to their children and
correct
so forth.
Well, so they trace a whole genetic line, generation after generation.
Right, it's a longitudinal study looking for drift in the DNA, in an attempt to find the starting point where these maladies have beset them. And they figured that running their show that way, meaning the 45,000s, was the way to go rather than a cooperative effort. At the time that these 45,000s exist, their society has taken on a very narcissistic, very dim view of their own past, of us. And while they know that we possess, according to them, the joined resonance, something special about our DNA, they basically look at us as inferior beings that they can pick up and do as they will, as if we reached down and picked up an ant off of an anthill. And so they care not about us any more than that.
Right. All right. Well, that explains the really horrible violations of people.
Indeed.
Right. Was there ever a comment made about cattle mutilations and what is being tracked?
I'm aware that some of the cattle mutilations are in fact involved in their longitudinal drift study. What they're doing is they're measuring the rate of drift in comparable DNA species.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of the cattle mutilations are legit, that they're extraterrestrial involved. The rest of them, it could be anything from pranksters to cultists to whatever.
Hard to imagine that many cultists or pranksters running around doing that kind of violence to a 1,500-pound animal. But
I don't know. I've run since the inception of my communication with people on the internet. I've met some wonderful people out there, but I've also met a fairly large cadre of special folks.
Sometimes I wonder if that fairly large cadre is verging on a majority. I really do.
I'm kind of hoping that it'll be a silent majority of the good people.
Yeah. Okay, so abductions, the 45s, mutilations, perhaps the 45s as well, which would explain some.
It would not be the 52s.
Understand. No. Okay, all right.
The 52s are the ones that are trying to cooperate with us and work with us.
Now, the 52s are clearly more enlightened, and this particular J-Rod that you were involved with, I think if I remember our first visit, you described him as an ambassador, a prisoner, and then an ambassador again.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. So he was from a downed craft, captured. Did he... And I asked this before, it's worth asking again. Did he ever indicate to you he wanted to go home?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. We'd be talking, 1996 time frame, which is right before the AQJR2 program was actually ceased. And he indicated it to me before he left, and before I left him, actually. And... And he indicated it again, of course, at the end of 2003, when in fact he did do what he
And he went home.
To do. Yeah.
He did get to go home.
Yes,
yes, sir.
Courtesy of Dan.
You
yes,
made
sir.
It happen, huh? Well,
mm-hmm.
yeah. That's a nice ending. Worried we might hear a different conclusion, although you did mention it last time, but I'm thinking on behalf of our listeners who missed the first time around. E.T. did get to go home in that case. Be right back with more in just a few minutes. Get right back to our conversation with Dan Burrish and Marcia McDowell. So what did you learn from this man who you had to take biological samples, tissue from? What did he tell you? And I assume, as you mentioned in our last program, that all of the, or most of the telecommunication that went on between the two of you was somehow monitored. Or did you feel you had some privacy with him?
Oh, there was definite privacy. They were monitoring all the time as
How did they monitor? How did they monitor telepathy?
Well, what they were doing is in fact, determining whether or not, with the equipment in the clean sphere, determining whether or not he was projecting electromagnetic waves. So they would know that he was speaking to me, and in fact, in many instances...
But they don't know what he was saying.
But they did not know what he was saying, and in most instances, I refused to tell them what he was saying, indicating that most of it was garbled or I wasn't understanding.
Well, you're admitting to some major fraud here, Dan.
Well, I just didn't tell them everything.
They tried very hard to get Dan to explain everything that was going on, because what they would do is they would see a spike in his vital signs, or they would see a body language change, a body movement change, something that would indicate that he was in communication. And then they would try to pick at his brain later and debrief him and try to get him to tell all aspects of what communication went on, but frankly...
You've got to understand what these people are like, too, Jeff. These people, meaning the majestic folks, they have no compunction whatsoever against breaking your bones if they want to get information from you.
Well, not to support what they're doing, but you can understand why they would be that potentially violent with someone. This is the greatest information treasury in history.
I understand their motivations, but... After having been on the receiving end of some of those, we'll just say persuasions, where even in one case I had my hand stepped on and broken, by their operatives.
Oh, no.
You know, I can only be so empathetic.
Well, I understand. I'm not, and for a moment, justifying it, but they're going to do whatever it takes to get what they want. That's their game. This is the biggest game of all. Communicating with
they did,
right.
And they did. One of the things that they were very careful about, if the Sigma unit had been in the clean sphere at all, every once in a while the Sigma unit would leave their internal communication system set up when the Aquarius unit would be coming in right up in back of it. So it was like a changing of the guard, if you will, coming in to do different experiments. They wanted to make sure that he did not get over to the communicator at all, because they were afraid that he had told me how they actually write. Now, there have been a lot of folklore out there. Some of it is intentional, others I don't know, about the writing systems and the symbology of the grays, the J-rods. How they actually communicate in writing is this. They have a reflective disc set, for instance, on a tabletop.
Right.
Above that disc, there would be a small light projector, like a small lamp. Off to the side of that is a small camera. What they actually do is they write with shadow. And these things, from what I understand, were also inside of their craft. They write with shadow, and they place their hands under the lamp, and the shapes that they make with their hands on the disc is then recorded with the camera, as well as the orientation of their hands. The orientations, I guess, are used for a type of vowel signatures.
Hmm.
Not that different from Hebrew Nikud. And So they would actually write that way. That's how they actually write. They don't put pen and, you know, hand and, I don't want pen and write.
Okay.
So they were scared of him going over and activating anything and writing to me. I guess I had them fairly well, meaning the Majestic folks, fairly well believing that whatever he was trying to communicate to me was not being effective. I played dumb well. But I failed in a couple instances, and after those failures, I paid the price for getting caught.
But these same MJ-12 people have now given you the green light to go ahead and reveal much of this information.
Well, they weren't, between you, me, and the fence post, aside from my good honor in not doing so, they had no way to stop me unless they were to take physical force on me. No way to stop me anyway, because they were going to adjournment anyway.
I see.
So their big overture of allowing me to talk is almost a misnomer.
Got it.
It's a non sequitur. I was probably going to let this information out one way or the other.
Okay. All right. So as soon as the information is out there, you are essentially safer than you otherwise would have been.
That's the prevailing wisdom.
Usually.
That's okay. The prevailing wisdom. But then again, you know, they one person who let some information out via Marcy, meaning a certain draft document 304, met his end in a very nasty plane crash too, and he didn't guarantee himself anything, any more safety by virtue of letting information out. So,
I do remember that that loss.
You know, who knows?
Yeah. Okay. So, what, Dan, specifically, did this man impart to you?
Okay.
That you want to present to the listeners?
A couple things of the many, but only a couple. Yes, I asked all of the questions that would normally be asked in a situation where a person had been involved in time travel.
Mm-hmm.
Three specific areas. Well, one area that I will not get into is the religious area. It would not be wise for me to get into that whatsoever. But one area involving a person named Roger Bacon. I've identified. I have to say to be perfectly correct about this. I've identified the individual as Roger Bacon since the meeting with the J-Rod. But he specifically showed me an individual meeting with another J-Rod, who was downloading to him sciences, workings of the future. And this individual wrote this information down very accurately and drew from his, you know, from his own perspective, from his own time, what he was seeing. And there's a rather famous document which is actually the product of that now out in society. Some say it must be a fraud because they haven't been able to decode it. It's no fraud.
All right. Stand by, and we will be back with Dan Burrish and Marcia McDowell in a minute. We'll be joining you. Dan Burrish and Marcia McDowell here. Hearing it first on our program. Very proud to have these people on to bring this information to you. All right, Dan, go right ahead. There's a lot to talk about. So we could do 20, 30 hours, probably not touching all of it. Do what you can. And
Marcy.
Yeah, she's editing.
Don't even think about it. Seriously, though, the document which was written has been carried down to us now, and some people have tried, some scientists have tried to use linguists, various encoding techniques to try to reproduce the document. They've had varying successes, and I'm not going to mention the name of the document because I've actually promised I wouldn't. You can if you want to, Marcia. But
it's the Voynich document.
I thought that's what it was.
Yeah.
In any case.
Now, well, hold on. That's a very interesting piece of work.
It is a very interesting piece of work,
Marcy,
Jeff.
What did Dan say about that before the break? I don't want to make him exert himself here, but what did he say about that document?
What I... What I said.
All right.
What I said was that the document is not a fraud, and I said that it contained information which had been transmitted from a time traveler, A.J. Rod, to Mr. Bacon. Mr. Bacon then encoded that information without intending to encode the drawings, because he was writing from his own perspective. That's all we can do, is write in our own frame of reference, if you will, to the world.
And the Voynich doc is on the internet. People can look it up.
Now, if people look at the Voynich document, they're going to notice a lot of artwork. And several of those pieces of artwork have been very closely matched with certain pieces of research, which are currently underway.
True, including LOTUS, the research project that I head.
Yes.
If you would like to, Jeff, I will send you a group of images which come from Voynich, and comparison images which were photographed, photomicrographed.
Photomicrographed.
Via my own microscope during Project LOTUS. And people can make of them what they will.
Are these for posting, or are they just...
You can post them. You can post them. I'll go ahead and allow you to post them, because there's been a little hoo-ha out there amongst a certain cadre of internet people wanting me to say this or that. And the problem with the Voynich document is this. Have I decoded most of it? Yes. Why? Roger Bacon was a dyslexic. So am I. He wrapped his letters in the same way that my brain decodes letters inappropriately. And my dyslexia was actually a function of being struck when I was in junior high school by a kid. A crime was committed on me. A kid who was attempting to jump into a local gang in Southern California.
Jeff, I don't know if you're aware of it or not. Dan was hit on the back of his head with a steel pipe.
I had my neck broke. And I've got a very large scar on the back of my head, and I've been in the halo, and I've was in a coma for a while after that, a long while, and through the grace of God, found my way home. From that, I had to relearn how to walk and talk again. This was the middle 1970s.
Wow.
I relearned how to add, subtract, multiply, and divide, because I couldn't after I woke up. From then on, I had to relearn how to decode letters so that I could read and deal with numerals and letters. But what I found when I finally looked into this document was that he possessed, by the way that he was wrapping his letters and the letter fonts that he used, that he possessed the same problem that I have. And I'm not going to get into exactly what it is, because I don't want others to decode this document. It is a dangerous document, and one that I feel between you, me, and probably Mr. Bacon, and I'm sure we all exist in some state after we go or go and return, that it should not have been written down. That it is actually a disservice. And the reason why it is this document is publicly known now and contains information along both the T1 and the T2 timeline of events which have yet to occur. I reached the point where I spotted some of my own work, and on the so-called infamous, what I call the DNA page, which I'll actually send along to you, which shows in one instance where his dyslexia did not take hold of him while he was writing, where he wrote from right to left in various fonts, including an Aramaic mem. He wrote, "The everlasting God will establish the knowledge of knowledge." And he wrote that in standard Hebrew, and it's decoded directly from it. So that would not have happened by happenstance if somebody just produced a nonsensical, I don't care if you believe in the 99 monkey, theory or not, enough of them typing. It would not have happened in that way because there's too many varying fonts, and why would it have come out in Hebrew? So, I'll send that along to you, and I'll also send some photomicrographs and a few things, but not enough to supply anyone with a cipher. It's dangerous because we do not want to commit the sin, so to speak, and I don't mean that religiously, I mean it societally, mm-hmm. of producing a prophecy to be self-fulfilled. I think that we need to move on into our future with our own courage, our own hearts, and not be restrained by what we hear from either Bacon in the Voynich document or the Looking Glass or the J-Rods. I think we have to make our own future. And I'm concerned enough about that, you know, as it is, just looking at the headlines today in the Middle East without even worrying about the J-Rod.
Right, of course. Okay, well, let me get back to this interaction, though. There, people want to know, what were some of the things that he told you, that he shared with you?
Well, that was one. Another was him actually showing me, mm-hmm. myself, being lifted out of a park in Southern California in 1973. Apparently, he was, in fact, aboard a craft which had traveled to 1973, mm-hmm. and was involved with the, as a spy, if you will, within the P-45 J-Rod abduction system that they had going on at that time.
Hmm.
And I saw myself actually lifted out of the park with my grandpa standing down in the park with his hand still in a baseball glove. He had apparently traveled to 73 and then did a subsequent travel to 1953, which is where the accident occurred. So if that isn't enough of a paradox for you, nothing is.
That is. That's a mind.
There was also, Dan, mm-hmm.
yep.
there was also the Egyptian thing.
Yeah, I know. I'm getting there.
Yeah.
About 3 minutes to the end of this hour.
Well, he showed me what appeared to be a large alabaster pyramid under construction. It was in a very thick air, swampy, hot, humid zone, mm-hmm. tropical trees.
Mm-hmm.
I heard people chanting the name Ra over and over again
mm-hmm.
as stone slabs slid upward between two rails with spinning white plasma underneath them. Along the side, I saw a guttural screaming in probably Egyptian, I don't know, J-Rod wearing an Egyptian headdress.
Really?
With a crozier stick. That is, in fact, the origin.
Huh.
That is the origin of my statement, which came out much later when before Marcia and I got a chance to work together, that the gods of the past were actually no more than humans of a potential future.
Yeah. Did you have a time frame on the construction of this alabaster pyramid, which I assume is the Great Pyramid? And
I believe it may have been, but I don't know for sure, and no, I don't.
The alabaster white would have been the limestone casing.
Probably so. Probably so, but no, I do not have a standard time frame. He just showed that to me and smiled at me because he then knew, I guess, that I was aware of a great truth concerning our past. But it was swampy. I saw swampy ground that the people who were working they didn't look like slaves to me. They looked like priests who were chanting Ra, and every time they would chant Ra, this out of a an area between two large concrete type or limestone type rails mm-hmm. would appear these beautiful swirling vortices of what looked like white plasma, and these stones, large stones, we're talking about room size,
mm-hmm.
Average room size stones were sliding up these rails with little effort, being just slightly touched by the priests as they were walking up next to them. It was profoundly disturbing and profoundly enlightening at the same time. As part of asking him about what he knew of creation, because that's always been a fascination of mine from a biological origin standpoint, he got into a great deal of sacred geometry with me as well.
Which Dan Winter has spent a lot of very productive years studying, and others.
Oh, I'd like to, when we come back from the break, I'd like to talk about Mr. Winter a bit.
Yeah. Okay. Was the pyramid partially completed and, I guess, partially covered with alabaster or limestone at the same time? It must have been. You'd think that they'd build it all first, then cap it, but I guess what you're telling us, it was partially complete and they were still working on pieces.
Well, I didn't see the top of it. All I saw were the angles, what looked like the sides of it.
I see.
And
okay.
But being that they were angles pointed toward one another, as if the lines would intersect, I'm making the assumption that it was a pyramid.
Okay. We'll pause and continue. Okay, Dr. Stan Burrish and Marcia McDowell here with us tonight. Hour three coming up next, talking about all sorts of very, very interesting material. Dan, we have this 1 hour left, and I again don't want to spend the whole hour on the J-Rod, but what else do you want to bring to the table about this man who went home and you spent, 2 years off and on working with?
Start of 1994. At the end of 1993, if my recollection serves, was the first time that I actually entered into the gantry area.
I remember that.
Oh yeah, it was the first time I had to shave my head.
Yeah.
And I was working my public job over at the Aladdin at the time, so I came in with a shaved head, and that spurred all the officers to shave their heads. But of course, I couldn't tell them why that I had shaved my hair off. So 1994 through 96 were the K-24 to K-42 samples that we ran. 2-3 years.
Jeff?
Hmm?
You know, probably something that Dan really wouldn't tell you on his own,
mm-hmm.
About the experience where he fell down and the J-Rod climbed on top of him.
Mm-hmm.
By the time the J-Rod had finished, communicating with Dan.
Right.
It really was a very, very profound experience because Dan was actually pulled out of there by the units that were on the outside of the clean sphere ready to come in.
Were these armed people, do you know?
No.
Dan, were they armed?
No, they didn't need to be armed. All they'd have to do is fire the repress valve,
yeah.
And that would cause a mild intumescence in the J-Rod.
Mm-hmm.
In the pressurized clean sphere, which would cause him extreme pain.
I understand. All right.
But they came in and dragged Dan out, but he was unconscious. And I believe it was quite some time before he regained consciousness. I was told that he was actually in a coma for quite some time.
I was out for a couple days.
Yeah.
How was it you were out? Did you whack your head?
No.
Overload, information overload.
Really?
He
downloaded that much to you that you just went into a
well,
safe space?
Let me put it this way, Jeff. The folks at Majestic, who are still pretty ticked that they couldn't get that much information about what the J-Rod actually talked to Dan about, they tried everything they could think of to get Dan to talk about what was, quote, downloaded.
Including...
They,
so have you.
What?
Well, yeah, but the thing is they tried...
like sodium pentothal? Like
yeah,
advanced
they tried
chemicals?
Hypnosis,
like hypnosis?
Sodium pentothal. Mm-hmm. They tried everything. It actually got to be a joke. It was nicknamed the Encyclopedia Galactica that Dan wasn't talking about.
It's not all that much. The basis of the information, which I'm not going to speak about, goes to the issue of self-fulfilling prophecy. It goes to potential future issues that he showed me, which would do absolutely no good for me to talk about. And in fact, it could do harm. There are people out there right now who have asked me, and Marcia, you know this, where do we go to be safe?
Oh, safe places.
Where do we go to be safe?
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's just prevent the problem to begin with,
right.
And then we don't need to worry about that.
Novel idea. It might sell. Let's try and market it.
Well, I told the guy, I said, do I look like Moses? I mean, come on. I'm just a guy who's had some fantastic experiences with an association of people for about 20 years. But that's it. Aside from that, I'm into my biology and the metaphysics research and the work on the Kabbalah work, and that's it. I'm not to be mistaken for anybody who can lead other people to safety. The only thing that I can suggest to people is that we're doing everything humanly possible to make sure that the events which triggered the Timeline 2 catastrophe in the history of the J-Rods will be prevented. And number two, to do what you can to make it a better world. That's what we're doing.
And the Timeline 2 catastrophe, Dan, is again targeted for what window?
We're in it now.
We're actually
truth be told, we're
back
in it now.
The middle of it.
We're in it now. A couple of years ago, we went to what was called yellow status. We are in an orange status right now. Very shortly, we'll be going into a red status, and then it will back to orange, yellow, and off as we finish our transition over the galactic plane. We're in it now. It could happen. It could happen, God forbid, anytime between now and in 2014, 2017.
Mm-hmm.
The projections that we received from the Looking Glass before she was shut down on the Timeline 2 catastrophe was again a very sobering. There's nowhere to run when you say 4 billion, 157 million dead.
Right.
There's nowhere to run. There's not that many of us left.
No safe place.
No. What we have to do is we have to focus positively on our future and take those steps which will prevent that catastrophe from occurring as a self-fulfilled prophecy.
Well, you mentioned self-fulfilled prophecies, and there seems to be an awful lot of programming, mind control, mind manipulation, social engineering, and all the rest of it, which could be construed to be leading people toward that very thing, to accept the fact that there's going to be a major war. Maybe one has broken out already. Maybe this is the beginning of an enormous war in the Middle East. We don't know. But it seems that everyone is set up for some kind of catastrophe, if you follow me. Not everyone, but most people. It's a catastrophe-oriented media we have now. It's a cataclysm. A month, we get a new one, a new scenario, a new scare, a new this, a new that, and it goes on and on. So
I can't get into the potential for the information that like this hokey color system that they came up with after September 11th.
Yeah.
Okay, I can't get into the potential of that being from the Mag PSYOP work, which has been done over decades, because I don't know that it was involved with it.
Mm-hmm.
However, what I can say is this: that within the psychological operation divisions of Majestic, there was a division called UFO Alien Question Folkloristics.
Mm-hmm.
And that group has invaded successfully over the many decades the entertainment industry, the alternative media, and ufology.
Mm.
Some within that group, because there have been changes over the decades too. History is dynamic, it's not static, and there have been changes in the groups. From the original inception of Majestic 12 to the Committee of the Majority in 1963, then finally the Committee of the Majority becoming defunct in the 2002-2003 timeframe, and then back to an internationalized version of Majestic 12, and here we are, that during that time, some of the people have had nefarious intent who are involved in the Committee of the Majority, and even in a few who are involved with the Majestic 12, nefarious intent for our own future.
Mm-hmm.
And because they held positions of authority, positions of sway, they were able to manipulate the PSYOP people within the folkloristics unit to invade the alternative media, invade the UFO community culture, invade the entertainment industry with negative precepts. And I think what we were looking at is we're actually looking at the programmed response of people to that negativity, which has been programmed in by the nefarious elements within Majestic 12. And I don't like saying damn anybody for it, but pretty close for them.
Well, the supercomputer models of all these potentials are certainly well known to the people pulling the strings. That's not a big surprise. So there are some globalist elements within MJ-12 that you're talking about, I think.
Oh, sure.
What we call globalists, who have, of course, called for the reduction of the world's population by 75 or 85%, depending on who you listen to.
Those would be the Illuminati, yes.
Right. Right.
Yes, and we are more than 100% opposed. One of the members of the Illuminati was called out for being what he was a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote me.
Yeah.
He was part of MJ-12 after the Committee of the Majority went defunct.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote me and he invited me to Rome and wanted to talk about my future and all of this business, and he put CCMJ1 mm-hmm. on the bottom of the letter.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he knew that I was fairly close with that particular individual, but he didn't figure that I would be close enough to cross everything over. So I picked a phone up, and MJ1 said, "What are you talking about?" Well, that began his downfall as we found that he was actually a member of the Illuminati.
Very interesting. Well, a mole.
Mm.
A mole exposed.
A mole exposed with nefarious intent for the future of humanity, yes.
Well, there's more than one of them.
Yep.
Hold on, gang. We'll pause and continue with Dan Burrish and Marcia McDowell in just a couple of minutes. Get back to Dan and Marcia. Dan, Timeline 1, Timeline 2 was covered rather extensively in your first visit here on July 3rd. The issue of war, world war, you mentioned 4 billion plus people. Timeline 2 between now and 2014, 2017 perhaps, may be gone, out of here. And they're not going to be taken up by E.T. and flown off to a Neverland somewhere. They're going to die. And you said in our first visit that this will mostly be accomplished through, if accomplished is the right word, affected by natural catastrophes, not suggesting World War 3, 4, or 5.
Well,
what do you see about that with more specificity?
Okay, with more specificity, in talking about the transition from Timeline 1 to Timeline 2, we would be facing a Timeline 2 catastrophe if we were to allow certain varieties of technology, the Looking Glass and the Stargate variety technology, to become self-activated by virtue of physics in the energetic space in which the Earth is presently traveling as we bob upward above the galactic plane. According to the history of the J-Rods, which is a Timeline 2 history, we were affected by a geophysical event which caused an inundation of much of the world by the oceans. This, in fact, was the cataclysm which brought forward the separation of our species from the varieties which were more spiritually oriented to the varieties which were, meaning the Orions, to the varieties which were less spiritually oriented, meaning the J-Rods.
Mm-hmm.
And presently, we are again moving to control those items.
If I could jump in for just a second,
please.
The technology items that Dan is talking about, there are natural type Stargate, and then there is the technological type, which would essentially, if they turn on, overwhelm with additional energy the natural Stargate. That would overwhelm the planet with
crust.
Too much energy. Now, if it's just the natural Stargate, as I understand it, our planet is designed to handle it. But when you throw additional technologies into the mix, that's where the problem is. That's why we are taking extraordinary steps to dismantle it, get rid of it through this time of processing up through this energetic area in space.
This does not give us a free lunch, though. When we pass this time, and I believe successfully, and remain on T1, what we were seeing in the looking glass was continued global catastrophe concerning our ecology and a building of wars. So a comment was made, and this was done a couple years ago when I was up there, no free lunch. When we leave T2 and we stay on T1, we're right on the path of prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the first to say that no matter which way this goes, I'm a firm believer in the ancient prophecies such as the Native American prophecies, that we will be entering into a time of change. We're there right now. It's just a question of which changes we're going to see, which ones that we will behold.
Okay.
There's one other thing, Jeff, if I might.
Yeah.
The issue of unity and the issue of the conjoined resonance with our DNA, as I understand it, now, Dan, please correct me if I'm wrong on this, but as I understand it, one of the main reasons that they rogue J-Rods were performing the abductions was to try to fix their genetic issues. That's the reason that the J-Rod that you worked with actually came back, to try to ameliorate some of these genetic problems. But
yes,
the genetic
some of them
problems
are natural. Some of them are
right.
The consequence of changes in the environment over thousands of years.
Right.
And other ones we still believe are a consequence, believed until the time of the cessation of the program, a consequence of the PNA oligomer intrusions that they had into their DNA.
Precisely.
Which was genetic engineering. They had peptide mm-hmm. nucleic acids actually added into their DNA, where the AQJR1 people, who are our predecessors, actually believed that the J-Rods were triplex DNA. And they were not triplex DNA, they were duplex DNA. It looked like, their DNA looked like the chromosomes, like something like an endoreduplicated chromosome.
Mm-hmm. I remember we talked about that.
But what they were is they were without throwing too many words out, they were called aminoethylglycine units, which were added in with bases into their DNA, attempting to change the electromagnetic configuration of their DNA to reach what they call the joint resonance, which was in fact our normal duplex DNA now.
DNA structure. This is what I'm getting at. Mm. The normal DNA structure that we have now, which is resonant, which is actually has the structured water in the correct structuring, is what they're looking for. Now, when we move through this and don't pursue the timeline that they see as their history, then it could ameliorate the entire problem because we won't have lost the conjoined resonance.
Hmm. I suspect that it will.
Okay.
Ameliorate the problem.
All right, very good. When we come back, I want to talk to Dan. He mentioned Kabbalah and metaphysics, and I want to see if there was anything that he learned from the J-Rod which connects those two in any way, or connects to either of those two in any way. Back in a minute. Okay, back with Dan Burrish and Marcia McDowell. Metaphysics and J-Rods and the Kabbalah. What do we have to tie those together, if anything?
Well, I'm not so certain, aside from the inherent geometries within the Kabbalistic Tree of Life, to tie the two together, meaning J-Rod with Kabbalah. However, one of the images that he showed me was very clearly a lotus flower opening up, and from that lotus flower mm-hmm. was what I only found out later, a Sri Yantra, which is an ancient mandala of creation. And from that, I saw what looked like to me droplets of water emerge and divide and feed what looked like a seed. Mm-hmm. And from there, a panoply of life was evolved from it.
Mm-hmm.
And what he showed me ended in an extremely stark vision. It looked like I was looking back into the face of another man. And it looked like that other man was ascending out of what appeared to be red clay. As if red clay was falling off from his face as he was ascending out from it and coming face to face with me. It was extremely stark and extremely frightening to me. What that means, I haven't really come fully to grips with that yet. I've accepted it in you know, within my own personal philosophy, within prayer, but I haven't really come to grips as to what that meant. And it was that Sri Yantra, which then those shapes, which then got me into looking at notions of sacred geometry, and I'm still in my novitiate, as it were, studying sacred geometry. I'm just learning. But we're having some fairly good correspondences and successes applying that sacred geometry to both Lotus. And it's actually been applying it to us because we've been finding certain forms in our research which seem to confirm a lot of the theory having to do with Platonic solids, and confirm for the first time, basically to my knowledge in history, with direct evidence that the Platonic solids spoken of by Plato in the Timaeus are actually a function of our reality. And you have been privy, as well as a few other individuals, to a fairly large storehouse of Lotus images. I think Marcia made you privy to them, yes?
Yes, I did. Jeff, did you get them?
Yeah.
The photo bucket? Okay. Without mentioning the name or anything like that, but if we talk in the future, which we may be able to do about Lotus, I will open up a fairly large storehouse for the public and let them see for the first time inside of our project of what we've really found.
Right.
And it's quite astounding. It's quite stunning. But the particular electromagnetic phenomena which is associated to this thing that we call Lotus has in its possession the power for great creation and great destruction. It's almost a little Shiva amongst itself, and so we're very careful as to what we're considering proprietary information about how to raise this phenomenon and examine it.
We have to be very careful. There's been experiences that we've had as we've been working through experimental paradigms, which have brought us up and made us aware of just how dangerous and difficult some of these concepts are and how real they are.
That's a nice way of putting explosions and cells coming from nowhere. We have found that most of this phenomenon is based at its root within geometric and both the geometric, hyperspace, and acoustic realm. We have diverged and put a publication out which was available for a short period of time on Eagles called The Emanation of the Solfeggio, which was a three-dimensional view of the ancient solfeggio frequencies. And we received such interest from it. We're grateful
Winter.
For the wonderful replies from Dan Winter, Dr. Len Horowitz.
Dr. Len Horowitz.
That we are in fact moving forward and we'll be turning The Emanation of the Solfeggio into a book.
Oh, neat. So Len is onto this, huh?
I'm sorry?
Len Horowitz is onto this too.
Yes.
Very much so. That's all we can should.
We've had some wonderful communications with him, and he's been so positive and supportive.
Oh, he's a glorious man.
Just wonderful.
Yeah. He is. Now, I had originally, you know, they say everything is a blessing. I originally communicated with another individual who basically screamed at me I said, I'd like you to please look at this, that it has a very important, and I think you probably know who I'm talking about, but very important aspects. And after I was screamed at, I kind of looked at the person's history, and then I wrote to Dan Winter. And Dan Winter received us with open arms as an open researcher. I told him, we'll share our research with you. And we have done so to some great extent, and he has shared some extremely important views with us. Very good man. I'm sorry for some of the problems that have been, you know, stemming around the research, but I also understand that there are ethnic issues involved and cultural issues. But the research that we're doing, while there are ethnic and cultural issues intrinsic to them, mm-hmm. are based in geometry, acoustics, and direct evidence. So we're proceeding forward without some of the pitfalls of previous researchers that may have upset certain individuals. Mm-hmm. We've been received open arms by several of people in the Jewish community,
mm-hmm.
We really look forward to a super book coming out. Hopefully by the end of this year.
That sounds exciting, too. Well, there's nothing but excitement with what you two are up to. And we'll come back with more. Our final segment already. Time went by very quickly, so try and line out a few things that you want to mention tonight, Dan, if you can. And we'll get right to that after this. Dan Burrish and Marcia McDowell. Doctors both and remarkable people, each in their own right. And in their own venues, but working together, and if Marcia can actually edit down 238,000 hours of video, how many was it?
Not that quite that many, but wow. It sure feels like it right about now.
I was on the wrong.
Tell you, we're trying to get all that video shot so that I don't have to talk about it forever, because I really want to simply focus on both the biological research that we're doing and the metaphysical research that we're doing, so that we can finish the books, possibly raise another version of Eagles Disobey.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. We did it once. I'm going to do it a second time.
No, we're disobedient, Eagles.
That's right. Possibly even put out with the acoustics information that we're learning, relaxation or / healing DVDs, and do positive things for the world. But what I don't think that we're going to be able to do is talk over a protracted period,
right,
about the experiences of the past. It would take up too much time, and we're looking to move into the future.
Timeline 2, T2.
Sir.
Meteor impact?
I'm not aware of any impact of that variety aside from what could occur in Timeline 1 as part of well-known prophecies concerning a period of unveiling for the people of the world.
Okay.
And that's as far as what I should really probably go into it. I do want to say this before we close.
Oh, I've got to get one more question in, too.
Okay, well, go ahead. Let me take care of your questions before I...
Yeah. We broke a story. We didn't break it, but we broke it. I mean, we were the first program to do this big. Morgellons disease. Have you been seeing that, reading it? The fiber disease, the bizarre colored fibers that are really, really perplexing medical and science in general. Do you have any insights about what this might be? It's not animal, it's not vegetable, it's not bacterial, it's not viral.
Okay.
It exhibits the characteristics of some kind of intelligence. It's really scary stuff.
I was asked during a short period of time where I was answering regular questions by somebody that I perceive as a good friend in the internet community, goes by the name Dex. About
Does he live in California?
Yeah.
Northern California. I know
I don't know about northern, but I've got a picture of him on a boat, I think, off from Cabo.
Okay, I think I know who Dex is. No, go ahead.
Yeah, nice guy. About Morgellons disease, and my little knowledge of it, my cursory inspection of it, I ran into the standard diagnoses of delusional parasitosis. That is not to say that I'm saying that's what it is.
No, it ain't.
Okay, that was my first knee-jerk reaction from it, because I react to the prosaic normally first as well. I don't, you know, automatically think of something off the wall. Now, I've seen a couple websites full of images. Some of these images are mixed and matched images containing normal parasites, or appear to at least, which inhabit the skin of human beings called Demodex follicularum. These are follicle mites, some of them. Now, I've also seen amongst those huge cadre of images items which looked like avulsions of tissue that may have undergone an inflammatory process or some sort of a inflammatory and healing process, maybe even chronic inflammation, I don't know. And then I've seen some fibers. What I've not seen is a good chemical analysis completed on the fibers.
Haven't been done yet.
And so what I have to do at that point is simply say, I don't know.
That's the most scientific thing you can do. There's some scientists who are saying people are scratching themselves and rubbing fibers into their bodies. Now, that doesn't explain away how the white fibers exhibit motility and that some of the other exudate from these open lesions will actually, when dunked in pure bleach, work its way up, crawl out of the bleach, so to speak, up the beaker stem, which is put in the beaker to drop it in there, and surround the actual edge of the inside of the beaker above the bleach. It's crawled out.
Well, now you can get motility of chemicals under varying grades of other chemicals touching them. And you can, in fact, affinity chromatography, like TLC chromatography, mm-hmm. is a chemical process whereby you can detect a particular chemical by its molecular weight, given how fast this chemical will basically run across a surface film, which has been impregnated with another chemical. It's a way of measuring weight for distance. Now, there could be some motility by virtue of chemical touching chemical, or by virtue of thermochemistry, kinetics. But I have not seen those studies. So I would be hard put, you know, to give an interpretation of that. Now, that said, I do have a friend who actually suffers, he's a security, agent from the former Majestic, who suffers from delusional parasitosis. And I have seen his legs and seen his arms, and what I have seen on his legs and his arms are not that different from what I have seen in the photographs of the individuals that have been presented as being Morgellons patients. Now, that does not say that the two are the same.
I understand, and that may lead to some confusion, understandably, among the dermatologists who have been consulting and trying to figure this out. But talking to the victims and really and listening to the research as presented on the program, on the site, something unique is going on. This is rather like the Red Rain of India. It's bizarre. The cells that came down the rain.
I'm aware of the Kerala rains as well.
Right.
Bill Hamilton sent me a bunch of on that.
Right.
And again, you see back to the prosaic, the last I heard from that is that they were basically fungal spores. That morphologically they matched fungal spores. And in fact, in the early studies which were done of these, DNA was located, but I'm not certain if it was thrown out due to cross-contamination or the concern for cross-contamination. And then the later studies which were reported concerning the Kerala rains, like a couple weeks afterward, didn't mention anything about DNA being found. So to me, the protocols being employed concerning the analysis of this rain are therefore suspect.
Yeah, could be. I'm not over there, but all I can do is read and listen, and you've shed a little bit more light on it. So we only have 3 minutes left. Let's get right to your final point, Dan.
Well, my final point is that it is no sin for a scientist to give deference to the Creator, and I do so. Mm-hmm. I do so regularly because of that philosophy, which is at the center of my life.
Mm-hmm.
I can read to you one statement here, and this is proof. This mm-hmm. I consider proof. This is a one-sentence statement, quote, "There is grandeur in this view of life with its several powers, having been originally breathed by the Creator, into a few forms or into one, in that, whilst this planet has gone cycling on according to the fixed law of gravity, from so simple a beginning, endless forms most beautiful and most wonderful have been and are being evolved.
Mm-hmm.
That's the last sentence from The Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selection from
mm-hmm.
Charles Darwin.
Mm-hmm.
I have asked for the people saying that I believe that all prayers are heard to pray for, meditate on, think of, whatever is in your philosophy for unity, for humanity, and all life during this time. A few, believe it or not, Jeff, have actually raised their fists against me even for that.
Oh.
And all I can do is pray for them and say God bless you as well.
Mm-hmm.
But we are in a time where actions are being taken, blood is being spilled, as we all know, and is being spilled even by secret operatives who are giving their lives for a cause. And that all I ask for people to do is think about unity. Pray for it. Meditate on it. Whatever you normally do.
The unity that's going to help carry us through this critical time and into a positive future.
That positive visualization, again, is more important and is stronger than even the negative visualizations that are going on the nightly news. And I am a true believer in that.
Mm-hmm.
We will continue our struggle, and I hope to talk with you again.
Well, indeed, the door is open.
We will continue our struggle, and we will survive and make it through this time. But one way or the other, we'll either make it together or we will lose together.
And that sums it up. It really does.
Yep. There's only one lifeboat called Earth.
Right. And it's got a few leaks, folks. Time to start patching the leaks.
Indeed.
Marcia, a quick final comment from you.
All I can say is that positive visualization, along with all the efforts that are being made behind the scenes, in front of the scenes, it's all coming down to the last crunch before we hit an invisible mark. And from that point on, we'll either move forward into timeline one or two,
mm-hmm.
but we need to move forward as a united people. That will keep our DNA resonance, and it will help the future of all of us, all of our kids, and all of their kids. We need to move forward as a unified people.
We owe it to our future to do that.
Oh, we certainly, if anyone knows that, Dan, it's you. Marcia, thanks again for being here. It's great, Marcia, always.
Thank you, Jeff.
And Dan, I salute you. We'll do this again down the road. And in the meantime, I'm here to help if I can do anything at all.
Thank you. I'll send you those images tomorrow.
Thank you, sir. Okay, good night.
Good night.
Good night. Okay, that's quite a conversation. And again, as I say often, there is a lot to think about.